This is the Technology Evangelist with Scott Schweitzer, and thank you for tuning in.
This episode is brought to you by Solarflare Communications. With over 1,500 customers worldwide, Solarflare has provided the server NIC cards accelerating electronic trading for a decade. This fall, Solarflare is seeking companies interested in beta testing their new firewall in a NIC called ServerLock. In return for testing, you will receive several leading-edge dual-port 10 gigabit NICs. To sign up, click on the link at the bottom of this podcast. Solarflare, where neural class networks are made simple. For more, please visit solarflare.com.
This is the Technology Evangelist. Today we're with Bob Van Valza, and we're talking about blockchains and digital currencies.
There is room for using any anonymous form of money to bad ends, but drugs or whatever. But it's the same, whether it's, you know, anonymous cash or anonymous virtual currency.
So I could take a wallet, put half a dozen bitcoins in it, and then literally take the wallet, hand the private key or the wallet itself over to somebody else and say, here, this is now yours. Do this thing for me that I asked you to do.
Right.
And I've paid them in a currency that's a lot harder to track.
Well, cash is not easy to track, right? It all comes to size, right? Which is the limits are $10,000, something like that, on the suspicious activity report.
So it's $10,000.
Yeah. So, you know, we had a local politician who, made a series of $9,999 withdrawals from his bank account. You know, and so even though that's the limit, I think the bank still filled out suspicious activity reports on him, or eventually the FBI got their hands on his account statements. But so the point is, it's because the government has the banks watching for suspicious transactions, you know, when the amount of money moving is large enough, then, you know, it raises these suspicions. That's just the way it works, rather the money being moved. And so again, all the government can watch is at the bank side or the exchange side. They can't watch the Bitcoin wallets. I mean, they certainly can see that I paid you $1 million in Bitcoin, but they don't know if that's because you murdered someone for me or you sang me a song, you know, and I really valued the song you sang. You know, they just don't know.
Right. And they wouldn't even know it was me if they didn't have any path back to my private key.
That's right.
Right.
That's right.
You know, so obviously Bitcoin's used, you know, for money laundering. It can be used for illicit things. What else is it used for outside of the obvious things we've talked about?
I'll go through a few, but let me mention briefly the relative uses, because a key question is if you say that, you know, there's 100 Bitcoin transactions and some of them were used for drugs and some of them were used for buying music or singing a song or something, you know.
Buying goats.
Goats are something, you know, worthy, a noble human endeavor, as opposed to something negative like drug or contract murder. The question is how much of Bitcoin is illicit traffic. And the answer is very, very little. It is the marquee thing that people think about. But the government had concerns about the use of Bitcoin for illicit transactions. And it was no secret that the place on actually it wasn't on the internet. It wasn't on the web. It was the dark web. It's called, there was a place called Silk Road, which was a marketplace where you could buy any kind of recreational drug. There were rumors that you could buy contract murders on there and all kinds of illicit things. And the government found that place. It was clearly the premier venue for buying and selling illicit things, and the government shut it down. And of course, there was a regular rate of Bitcoin transactions up to that point of the shutdown per day, and there was a rate afterwards. And it's hard to look back in history and even see the date when that happened. It was October 2013. I just looked at the data today, and you don't see much of a blip at all, which says to me that the vast majority of Bitcoin transactions are not, you know, contract murders and illicit drugs. They're, you know, like you say, goats and chickens. And I actually think the majority of it is me having family in another place and sending money back to my family. It's avoiding the money which would normally go to Western Union or Citibank or whoever does the international money transfers. That's where I think it is. And there's speculators are probably in there too. So there's a certain amount of speculation that goes on. So Bitcoin has lots of people who are hoping the value goes up. There's probably some people who are betting the value goes down. That each of those is a source of transactions.
It's easier to send them Bitcoin than to send them a goat.
Yes, sure is.
How does one go about buying and selling Bitcoins?
Well, as you mentioned, you have to get one of these wallet things first, which is free. It's just you go to a website or download some software from the App Store. And then there are Bitcoin ATMs in any big city, you know, Chicago. Well, in fact, I did a presentation on Bitcoin for my company, which is an office, you know, right in downtown Chicago. And I just, as an exercise, I went and said, you know, find the Bitcoin ATM closest to my office. And it was 0.2 mile away. Now there's a Citibank ATM in the lobby of my building. I don't even have to go outside. So Bitcoin ATMs are not as common as regular old U.S. dollar ATMs. But you know, beyond that one, there were a dozen Bitcoin ATMs within a couple miles of my office in downtown Chicago, maybe just a mile or so. So they're out there. So you can, once you have a wallet, you can go to an ATM and put $20 bills into the ATM and get Bitcoin showing up in your wallet. There's also websites you can go to. I mentioned Coinbase. Coinbase.com is a good exchange. And you give them your bank account number, and they send a couple of small transactions to make sure it's you. And you give them a photocopy of your driver's license, and then away you go. And I mentioned blockchain.info is a good place to get one of these wallets. And off you. You're ready to buy and hold Bitcoin.
What are hard forks?
Yeah, it doesn't. So a hard fork is it goes back to the question you were asking about, can you make your own Bitcoin? And there was a case recently where a group of people who had been Bitcoin miners said, you know, we don't like something about Bitcoin. We don't like the rules of Bitcoin. Specifically, they didn't like the fact that Bitcoin can't handle more than about 3 transactions per second. And that may sound like a lot, 3 transactions per second, but if you think about, the number of transactions per second that Visa and MasterCard are doing, at peak shopping hours, it's a drop in the bucket. So they wanted to create something like Bitcoin, but that could handle, thousands of transactions per second. And so they took the basic Bitcoin software and said, we like the history you guys have. We like the ledger system. We like everything except a few numbers, and they just changed a few numbers that let it do transactions faster and called it Bitcoin Cash instead of regular Bitcoin. And that was called a hard fork because up to the point where they started their alternative currency, there's a shared blockchain, but the blockchain splits in two at the time they started up their network. And a miner had to decide if they were going to keep mining on the regular Bitcoin blockchain or move over to this Bitcoin Cash blockchain. And so that was an interesting experiment. It's still going on. And it's one of the ways to innovate with new cryptocurrencies is to do this sort of hard fork thing.
So how about any final thoughts or notes on Bitcoin that you want to just fit in anonymous, fit in any old place?
Sure. Well, there's a lot of people who ask me about Bitcoin and with almost a worried tone in their voice. And I look at Bitcoin as an advancement in technology. It's a new money technology. And in the same way that, puka shells were better than bartering goats for chickens and, currencies, were invented, Bitcoin is just the latest invention in money technology. And I think people will keep inventing all kinds of new technologies that as long as they solve problems. There's a lot of technologies have been invented and then never applied. But if you look at the history of Bitcoin, people have been continuously applying it. And in fact, a very interesting point to me is that the value of Bitcoin is correlated with the square of the number of unique people doing Bitcoin transactions in a day. So this is what's called Metcalfe's law, something you certainly know about on the solar flare side. The value of a network is proportional to the square of the number of nodes on the network. And there's Correct. New research which has shown that the value of a Bitcoin is proportional to the square of the number of people using Bitcoin in a given day. So that's one of the things which may have accounted for some of the rise in the value of a Bitcoin. So, I would say that an economist might call Bitcoins today a pretty good medium of exchange, meaning that, it's better than swapping goats for chickens. But I think an economist would also say that Bitcoin's not a very good store of value because of the volatility you mentioned. So that's it in a nutshell.
Interesting. So if we took the 3 transactions per second and then we took the square of that, that would almost give us some idea of the value.
Yeah.
It's not the unique number of people that have used it, but it probably could be tied back statistically to a unique number of people.
Yes, and it has maxed out. We're at the years ago we hit the 3 transaction per second rate, and it's staying there. And it, in fact, it used to be transactions were literally free. And the reason you have to pay for a transaction today is because in order to get in to the 3 transactions per second limit, you have to pay to get in there. And there just aren't enough to go around for people who are trying to spend, you know, micro cents. But, you know, $10 still gets in just fine.
This is Scott Schweitzer, the technology evangelist. And I'd like to provide a special thanks to Bob Van Valza for lending his expertise on blockchains and bitcoins to further clarify this for us. Several things have changed since Bob and I first recorded the initial half of these episodes on digital currencies back on September 14th. And I'd like to address those now. When we started this series on Bitcoin, it was trading around 3,000. And this week, December 8th, it passed 18,000 US dollars for the first time. It's amazing to see that average people are now interested in this aspect of technology. Beyond their smartphones, most people don't care how things work. Regular folks are asking, what is this Bitcoin thing? We've addressed much of this in the prior 6 parts of this podcast, but let me hopefully dispel the most common myth that Bitcoin isn't real. I'm asked, or in fact told by people, that Bitcoin isn't real. And the primary argument is that we can't touch it. There's no physical currency. I then ask, when was the last time you were actually paid in physical currency? Our paychecks are direct deposited, and we use credit cards and contactless payment systems all the time. Actual currency for normal day-to-day transactions has gone out of vogue. If someone's uncomfortable with the realness of Bitcoin, they can go to select Bitcoin ATMs and turn their Bitcoin into U.S. currency certificates nearly as easily as using a regular ATM. So Bitcoin is just as real as U.S. currency. They just don't waste the time or resources printing out actual currency certificates. Suppose I'd obtained a bearer bond from a bank for $120,000 back on September 14th. I could have presented it to you then just as easily as I could have created a digital wallet worth $120,000 in Bitcoin and then printed out that private key and the instructions and presented that piece of paper to you. Both are small, finite paper documents, not unlike actual U.S. currency, but with a promise value of $120,000. At that point in time, both documents were also worth 100,000 euros, and both were highly volatile. A single match could destroy both documents, forever eliminating that value from the world. By December 8th, that bearer bond for $120,000 had increased in value from 100,000 euros to 102,000 euros, further proving that the value of U.S. currency isn't fixed. But more importantly, the Bitcoin wallet is now worth 470,000 euros. Which would you rather have? If that's not real enough, 2 of the U.S.'s biggest derivative markets will begin trading on Bitcoin. This week, CBOE, on Sunday night, December 10th, will begin accepting contracts. And on December 18th, CME will begin taking futures contracts. Some believe this might aid in stabilizing the currency. We hope you've enjoyed this series on digital currencies and Bitcoin. Please stay tuned. Our next series is on security, starting later this month.